Now, as you can imagine, just a quick warning up front, The Deuce is about pornography and sex and prostitution. We keep it fairly clean. This is a family show, but if that subject matter concerns you, please bear that in mind.
Hey, y'all. Sam Sanders here. Want to tell you about the only NPR show where you can hear about the latest White House drama and the return of TRL to MTV. The show is called It's Been a Minute. Every Friday, we catch up on the week of news and culture, everything. And every Tuesday, I sit down for some long interviews with authors, filmmakers, directors, and more. You can find It's Been a Minute on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Glenn Weldon.
Hey, Stephen Thompson. Today, we're talking about a show that premiered on HBO Sunday night.
That's right. We are talking about The Deuce. It's a new show from creators David Simon and George Pelicanos. The two also made The Wire and Tremé, among others. This time around, their subject is prostitution and the rise of the porn industry in New York City's Times Square.
The Deuce opens in 1971, when Times Square was a grubby, crime-ridden place where prostitution took place out in the open.
Yeah, it stars James Franco, actually two James Francos, as a set of twins who get involved in running bars and massage parlors. It's also got Maggie Gyllenhaal as a prostitute who takes an interest in making adult films.
There's also a huge cast of actors playing cops and prostitutes and lowlifes and strivers. It's an ambitious web of stories, so we've got a lot to discuss on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour.
We've got two guests here to talk about The Deuce. Barry Hardiman of NPR's Weekend Edition. Hello, Barry.
Hi.
Now, Katie Presley, you heard earlier this week, but why don't you tell the nice people what you do once again?
I write about feminism and pop culture around the internet.
Excellent. Well, it is great to have you both here. I'm going to start actually with Glenn. Glenn, I know you just spent 8.5 hours watching the first season of The Deuce in its entirety. Tell us what you think.
Well, I think we might do people a service by explaining what this show is not first. It's not Entourage. It's not Ballers. And it's not, most importantly, Vinyl. Vinyl was a show on HBO set in the 70s in L.A. This is a show on HBO set in the 70s in New York City. I've already had a couple colleagues come up to me and say, I'm not going to watch that show because I'm so sick of what HBO is doing with this, you know, its requisite boobs. And
I was one of those colleagues.
Well, and
I remember where we were.
What you didn't say is, I'm so sick of glamorizing the 70s. Well, I've got news. This show is doing many things to the 1970s. Glamorizing is not one of them, at least. Grubification, maybe. Yeah. A defilement of the 70s. Mm-hmm. And just as a quick sidebar, I mean, in the 90s, if you were around in the 90s, the 70s came back, and it was cute, and there was bell bottoms, and oh, look at the size of these sunglasses. But that was like this fetishized notion of the 70s. This is the 70s that I remember. There is a grime to this show on every surface. They spend a lot of time in a greasy spoon, which is a greasy knife and fork and napkin holder. And this show sets you up for what you're about to experience very early on in a way that I admire. Over a plate of the nastiest looking eggs, the greasiest, runniest eggs, two prostitutes share a lipstick. And that was the first time watching the show that I said to myself aloud, public health nightmare, as I was watching the show. The first of many times. Anytime somebody goes to that hotel and they put their bare butt onto a bedsheet, I'm like, public health nightmare. There's a lot of David Simon-ness to the show that we can talk about in good ways and bad. Believe it or not, this is a David Simon show in which the journalism storyline is the least effective.
I was going to say, that is the one that really did nothing for me.
Maggie Gyllenhaal is fantastic in this. I wonder, and I want to hear from you folks, you know, the fact that half of these episodes were directed by women, that Maggie Gyllenhaal is a producer, hands-on producer, not an executive producer like many other people, but like actually in the mix. Mm-hmm. To me, that made a difference. I really dug this show, but we can talk about the stuff that worked and didn't work.
Katie Presley, I know you were a Tremé person. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of this?
I love Tremé because I love New Orleans, and Tremé is a contemporary story taking place right around Katrina, immediately before and very much after. So I connected to it faster. There was no entry because I could immediately say, yes, that's what that looks like, or no, that's not what that looks like. And this was all kind of it's weird to say fantastical because it was so dirty and that's not fantastical, but it was nothing about it was real to me. I was born later and didn't go to New York for the first time until, you know, the aughts. So it took me a while to get into it and appreciate it. And I also, I guess we can talk about this soon, but James Franco doesn't quite do it for me. So okay. Give me two and I'm...
More of him to love.
More of him to love. But I also, I agree, Maggie Gyllenhaal was great. And I think lots of the women that play sex workers are totally compelling. And the pimps are very compelling humans to watch, even if you hate them.
Which I think you're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How about you, Barry?
I think that this is like almost inarguably a very, very good, high quality show. I was aware of that. I am about halfway through. I was aware of it through every episode. I did have that feeling that I often do, that the quality of it, whether it be the, you know, beauty of the grubbiness, as we keep calling it, because I have to tell you, you know, the way that the trash blows down 42nd Street is artful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I still really love a high waist bell bottom. Artful. it is so beautiful in all these ways. And not to mention all of these sort of these David Simon set pieces, you know, discussing Nixon Vietnam policy, a discussion that happens between two pimps in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, here we are. It's David Simon. In the same way that I'm always aware of, you know, like Aaron Sorkin, you know,
sure,
being
sure.
like a competent yeah. woman who's being mansplained or whatever.
Right.
My awareness was always so heightened by all of these different things that are inarguably good that I did not feel as connected to it mm-hmm. as I have felt to Tremé, mm-hmm. as I felt to The Wire, certainly. But that said, I will say the one thing that I felt immediately emotionally into was Maggie Gyllenhaal's character, the way she moves, mm-hmm. you know, her funny body, which already looks kind of broken just mm-hmm. because she has that sort of that height and that odd right. crookedness. And the way she moves, I loved all the shots of her looking at herself in the mirror. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, even heavy-handed as that is, that is the point at which I was like, okay, I will mm-hmm. do another episode. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, again, it's inarguably good. I just, you know, we will discuss more whether it is inarguably good enough for you to spend 8 episodes mm-hmm. with.
Well, I think one thing that it's important to set people up with is the expectation that this show, these 8 episodes, are a long wind-up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very long.
Yep.
They are not actually...
Exposition.
This is not actually necessarily telling the story of the porn industry mm-hmm. in Times Square. It is telling... These 8 episodes are leading to the beginning of the story.
Yes.
Right.
And so what you get in those 8.5 hours is an enormous amount of character development. Mm-hmm. And I am there for that mm-hmm. character development. There are so many incredibly compelling character actors on the screen. I too loved Maggie Gyllenhaal. I think that, I mean, she's given an incredible arc mm-hmm. to play out, and she makes a meal of it. She is wonderful. There are so many terrific performances scattered throughout. I agree with Glenn completely that the journalist stuff did absolutely nothing.
But let's remember, in The Wire, it was the weakest storyline
right.
as well.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's my
exactly.
Point, yeah.
He's always
actually Tremé.
Oh, I thought you were,
yeah, Tremé is not that journalist. He's one of my favorite characters right. on this show. The person that plays the journalist in Tremé, but in Tremé, it's not. I will say I related to Sandra, the journalist, because she, like me, dates men purely anthropologically.
Yeah, well done.
I did appreciate that.
I agree completely about the beautiful ugliness of the way the show is shot, which involves, of course, an incredible amount of work to make it look like they've done no work. Mm-hmm. They removed trees via CGI. They did all sorts of things to recreate 1971. I also love, and one thing that I think isn't getting enough attention, the sound design of this show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
agreed.
They do an incredible job whenever you're outside of just putting this kind of ambient hostility
mm-hmm.
yeah.
in the air. And it's car horns, it's people screaming, there's mm-hmm. there's just yelling of profanity. You feel assaulted by mm-hmm. the outside. And I first went to New York in the early 90s when it was starting to be a little less like that, but that was always my yeah. vision of New York, was that it was this unrelentingly mm-hmm, unrelentingly right. loud, angry place.
Right.
And this show, I think, really captures that.
The David Simon-ness, we can talk about it. I mean, you have... In the very first episode, almost in the first scene, a character expressing knowledge which is seemingly incongruous with his station, which mm-hmm. is the David Simon thing.
Yeah. Right.
And what it's fascinating to me that it has now become meta, where he's subverting our expectations in a very predictable way. It's kind of odd. Maggie Gyllenhaal, I think one of the reasons she works so well is A, she's great, but B, Simon and Pelicanos write dialogue. They love language. Mm-hmm. And they have these characters who are very loquacious, and she is not. And what she's doing in most of the scenes she's in is reacting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in many cases, the times when you sit there and you just admire what she's doing, and you also, you know, empathize with the character, is when she's not saying something. Right. When she realizes that there's something she could say at this moment, mm-hmm. but she's not going to.
Mm-hmm.
And the other David Simon thing is that, you know, we have all these different storylines coming together. And if you're watching it as a queer dude, you're like, well, at some point, there's got to be some. Oh, there it is. There it is.
Okay.
All right. Check. You know. But yeah, it's I do think it takes a while to get to the fireworks factory of the porn industry.
Oh, yeah.
And in the meantime, we're getting a lot of different folks working. What do you guys think of the Abby character, who I think is supposed to stand as the audience surrogate? Abby is a college student who goes to work in the bar that James Franco runs. I found her off-putting. I found her.
So did Katie.
I found her really condescending and smug, and I'm not sure the show thinks she is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's right. The smirkiness of her looking in that made me hate myself in a way that makes me think you're right. There's something about, she felt miscast to me too. Mm-hmm. It's not that she seemed too old. It's that she seemed too knowing in a way that didn't work for me.
She gets a backstory in episode 7, which I found disappointing. And
agreed.
I mean, a number of characters on this show are basically devices. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly the journalist is nothing but a device. Mm-hmm. I think Abby is somewhat of a device in terms of coming in as an outsider, is always kind of slightly, whether she means to or not, peering down her nose at this world.
Yep.
And I do think like that is an interesting perspective to show, is that this is not this completely contained world. It's kind of the edges of it are blurring out into regular life.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of stepped into it sideways and is like always kind of trying to rescue people from it. And the show is always kind of teasing at, like, why are these people here? And it never actually answers that question, but she's sort of there, I think, to be one of the people interrogating that world. I did want to ask, because there are so many great character actors in this and so many great performances, I wanted to go around the table and just, like, what's your favorite one?
I loved Lawrence Gilliard Jr., who plays a cop in this, and he was, you may, fans of The Wire may remember him as D'Angelo Barksdale.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there are a lot of little Wire crossovers, which do feel like little love letters to those of us that really, really, really adored it. I mean, what he does with, again, with his sparse dialogue, but just face, he looks... Watching him play such a different character is wonderful. So again, you could pick any number. This is a hugely populated world, but that's the one that came to mind.
Nice. How about you, Glenn?
You want me to say Ralph Macchio. Ralph Macchio! But actually, it's David Krumholtz, who plays a kind of a porn purveyor in this thing.
Kind of a Ron Jeremy-looking fella.
Kind of a Ron Jeremy-looking fella. This is why you hire a David Krumholtz. He doesn't give you the reaction you expect, right? He does more. And you're always looking at him wondering, well, like, why is that the reaction exactly?
Mm-hmm.
What he's doing is he's giving you depth. He's not just mouthing the words. He's creating a character, a being who is in this world who doesn't necessarily, who's not flat to. And that develops in ways that we don't want to spoil. But I think that's a huge part of the next season when it comes.
Yeah, I think he's great too. How about you, Katie?
My favorite is Chris Coy, who, as I mentioned before, was the journalist on Tremé. In this, he, one of the responsible Franco brother, the barman, is given an opportunity to open a new bar. And it's an offer he can't refuse.
Uh-huh.
And it's a gay bar that he's taking over.
Yeah.
And so Chris Coy plays a barman from the last bar.
Right.
And so he's great. And so James Franco takes him on. Vincent takes him on. He brings the homosexual agenda. He's a reminder that the swinging 70s were happening in New York. He's how we see clubs. He's how we... Mm-hmm. He dances.
Boys in the Sand.
Yes. That's right. I was like, there's the movie. He goes to Boys in the Sand.
Mm-hmm.
I find his character so human and so funny and also dear. I just root for him.
Yeah.
And he and Abby get together to bring live music into the bar, which I think will be another opportunity for the 70s.
Yeah.
Most of us who did not live in New York in 1971 maybe have heard of.
Yeah, I think he's terrific as well. I mean, there are so many to choose from. For me, it's Gary Carr. who plays Cece.
Oh, yes.
One of the pimps. And there's you get these several scenes of pimps feeling sorry for themselves, mm-hmm. which is my least favorite subgenre of popular culture.
True.
It's hard out here for a pimp. Pimpin' mm-hmm. ain't easy. Can all just mm-hmm. jump in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
But that self-pitying is important because one of the things that you're watching in this show is the slow marginalization.
The transition.
And the transition to obsolescence of pimping.
Mm-hmm.
He's so magnetic. Mm-hmm. I'm drawn to wherever his face is on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I look at him and I think that is a massive movie star.
Mm-hmm.
That is your next big star.
Mm-hmm.
This show is so much. I mean, like every David Simon show, this show is about systems.
It's economics.
It's about economics. It's about the hustle and about hustling. What that hustle is about and what that is selling is women.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about its characterization of this trade and of the women in particular?
Well, one of the reasons I think Treme worked better for me is that I think I agreed, my interests aligned more with Simon's and Pellicano's interests. And so the stories that they gave time to were the story. I was like, yes, thank you for coming back to this. More info here, please.
Mm-hmm.
And several times in The Deuce, I thought to myself, why? Why do I have to watch more about this guy? I want to watch more about Candy and Ruby,
yeah,
you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Of course, I wanted the show to be made entirely of women and made entirely by women, mm-hmm. starring women. So, of course, I'm going to be disappointed because you're ever going to show a guy.
right.
But I guess that's not realistic.
I would agree with you. I think that's one of the reasons why Gyllenhaal is so, you know, magnetic. But all of the women, whether it's a scene just in The Greasy Spoon or, you know, in later episodes as this transition is made, are the ones that I am interested in. And it's a good point because I do feel like, you know, again, his priorities are this is the economy. This is the, mm-hmm. you know, and I need to show all the parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes showing the exploitation is exploitative.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I don't know if I am in a moment in just my television watching where I am maybe I've like had it up to my eyeballs mm-hmm. with that. But I wanted more, even more context for these women than
right.
I got. There were many parts of this that I found hard to watch. And it wasn't just the violence.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
right.
You know, it was also just the fact of how sexual.
The fact of it, exactly. Because there's a good interview with both Simon and Pellicanos in The Guardian where they talk about their feeling of how pornography has coarsened the culture and how they want to be a little bit more journalistic. They don't want to come at it with this giant moralistic thing
right.
and force the audience to agree with them about what pornography has done. But they make the point that even if you don't watch pornography, you've internalized its narrative because the culture has in a very basic way. So what was refreshing to me, and I'm using the word refreshing in a really broad sense, is is how ugly and mm-hmm. clinical and not intended to arouse in any way, but just rutting
mm-hmm.
the way the sex on the show and the violence in the show, obviously, mm-hmm. it was there to be about who profits.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, who is making the money? Who is making the decisions? And we're transitioning from the pimps to white people running the massage parlors, right? And
it's
all about that. And the very pat thing that people are going to say about the show, that they're going to think they sound smart, but they're going to say, The Wire was about race, this is about gender. There's an element of truth to that, but I think the depiction of the equal opportunity nudity is actually something the show needs. It's something
mm-hmm.
that the show, to make its point in a non- haranguing kind of way, it needs to show you this flat, uninteresting sex.
However, I will say the question mark I'll throw up to that gender equality, inequality is I believe that prosthetics were used
yes.
oh, yeah.
for
right.
the men
right.
and
yeah.
not for the ladies. So it continues to be
no,
completely normal to put mm-hmm. our naked bodies, but mm-hmm. the other is still too...
too hot to handle.
Too big a deal.
And I will say that when the gay sex is depicted, it is logistically impossible. I'll just leave
yeah,
it at that.
Yeah,
man,
yeah.
I almost texted you.
And that's important because in American Gods, when they had a sex scene, they mm-hmm. reshot it because the director...
Somebody was like,
this wouldn't work.
mm-hmm. One last quick question. we were talking about things that pull us out of this story. How did you feel watching this James Franco performance?
I felt like there's a line when Abby at the beginning, when she's still a proto-feminist NYU student, sees that Vincent has put his barmaids in leotards mm-hmm. as a quick grab for customers. She says, how do they feel about being objectified? And he says, object to who?
Yeah.
And it turns out that is the line I have been expecting James Franco to say for his entire career. He said it, and I said, we've come full circle.
Yeah, I agree. I have nothing to add to that. That's perfect.
All right. Well, we want to know what you think about The Deuce. Visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or on Twitter at PCHH. And when we come back, it'll be time for our favorite segment of every week, What is Making Us Happy? So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Brooklinen. They make luxury sheets at non-luxury prices. By cutting out the middleman, they bypass costs and pass the savings on to you. With Brooklinen, they offer two different types of weaves. Buttery soft luxe, soft, smooth, and perfect for year-round comfort. Or crisp and cool classic, lightweight and breathable. Mix and match your way to bed perfection. Shop now at brooklinen.com and use code HAPPYHOUR to get $20 off plus free shipping. Support for this podcast and the following message come from WordPress.com. Creating your website on WordPress.com helps your customers find you, remember you, and connect with you. At WordPress.com, you'll find hundreds of beautiful designs, the ability to add a custom domain name, and features to make your business more visible online. Using the technology that powers 28% of all websites, get 15% off your new website today at WordPress.com/happyhour.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time once again for What's Making Us Happy this week. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this week, buddy?
Retro gaming is a thing.
Yes.
It's not necessarily my thing, but it's a thing. There's a side-scrolling run-and-gun platform video game that feels very old school, but is very not, because it was just released, I think, a couple years ago, but it just came out on PlayStation 4, which I'm playing it on. It's got a very 80s action movie aesthetic. You rescue prisoners, you run to the top of the level, you hoist the American flag, you chop her out as the entire scenery behind you blows up. It is called Broforce. as you rescue different prisoners, you become different 80s action movie stars within the legal bounds of copyright.
Sure.
You become Rambro.
Oh,
and
my God.
Bromando, perhaps you sense a theme. Brominator and Brohard and many, many more. I urge you, if you play this game, not to look up who you're going to become, because you become these people. You're forced to play as them. And it's every time it happens, it's just this little magical moment of terrible pun and the quintessential 80s action movie star. If video games are art, and I believe they are, this game is an airbrushed side of a van. This game is a velvet painting at a truck stop where Elvis is riding an eagle. It is just perfect. I played it with a friend of the show, Chris Klimek, because this game is bioengineered for him.
Yeah.
And we had a great time. So that's Broforce on many different platforms, but PlayStation 4 as well.
Thank you so much. I am so in. Mm. Thank you, Glenn Weldon. Katie Presley, how about you? What's making you happy this week?
I was really hoping I would get to follow up Broforce. A week ago, Taylor Swift's new video came out. And right before it came out, we were teased with a couple of images from it. One of the many tweets that went viral making fun of it was, it said, my daddy Pennsylvania, mama from Pennsylvania. You mix that pencil with a vania, I am from Pennsylvania. That made me laugh from a good deep place. So I looked up the comedian who wrote the tweet. Her name is Marsha Belsky. Turns out Marsha Belsky has a podcast called Miss Andry with Marsha and Ray. So Marsha Belsky is a Brooklyn comedian. She started this podcast with her friend Ray Sani. They are both comedians, and they have started this movement that is called Final Wave Feminism, because there will be no other wave. Women will rise, men will fall.
It's just a beach.
It's just a beach. And this podcast is so funny, and it's loose, and I mean, if vocal fry bothers you, if how women talk bothers you, this is not the show for you. Of course, we would be remiss to talk about misandry existing on the internet without nodding to Mallory Ortberg, mm-hmm. who had her wonderful tag on the toast. The tag was, misandry is real, .. real cool. And if you click on that tag on the toast, you will find such posts as the misandrist's prayer, misandrist lullabies, and 1930s films that could easily double as titles for misandrist manifestos. So I see a direct line from Mallory Ortberg to Miss Andrew with Marcia and Ray. I am being made happy by the discovery of that podcast via a tweet that made me laugh. The Twitter handle is at Miss Andrew with MR.
All right. Thank you, Katie Pressley. Barry Hardiman, what's making you happy this week?
What's making me happy this week is a book, I'm sorry to say, yet again.
Yes.
This, I feel like, is a perfect fall book for some reason. It felt like exactly the kind of book that you can read a little bit outside, but also a little bit inside. You know, you don't need to be on a beach. You could just sort of let the wind rush over your jacket. It's by Celeste Ng, spelled N-G, and it's called Little Fires Everywhere. And
yes.
It is... you may remember her last book was called Everything I Never Told You, which is also a perfect novel. This one I love so much and feels really, really great for this moment. It is the story of Shaker Heights, Ohio, of two families and actually the whole town. It's a really wonderful portrait of a town. And it to say too much about it would sort of would give too much away. But it's one of those wonderful sort of domestic fiction books that also functions as a mystery about being a human.
Mm.
I read it as a galley earlier this summer and went back to it recently and was so glad that I could go back to it 3 months later because I got all new stuff out of it. And it's really a book you should own. I can't say enough about this. It's called Little Fires Everywhere. It came out last week. Celeste Ng, and her Twitter feed is also really wonderful. It is at pronounced Ng. Anyway, go get it.
Thank you very much, Barry Hardiman. I am tempted to say that what is making me happy is the return of football season. That is making me happy. But I do want to call attention to a really wonderful story that a lot of people who do pay attention to football know the story. If you don't, let me tell you the story about the fundraising prowess of a football player named J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt plays defensive end for the Houston Texans. Obviously, Houston is still reeling from the effects of Hurricane Harvey. J.J. Watt, a former Wisconsin Badger, started a You Caring page to try to raise money for Hurricane Harvey recovery. And he pledged $100,000 of his own money, and his goal was to raise $200,000. And as of this taping, he has raised $31 million. And... I mean, it's just a gorgeous story. I mean, part of it is, I think as this has accelerated, he has become a repository for a lot of Hurricane Harvey donations. And of course, he's gotten a lot of like big ticket. I mean, he wanted to raise $200,000. That's how much he raised from Drake. As this story has gone on, and I do recommend looking at his little videos on his Twitter feed where he talks about how incredibly moved and happy he is by this. That's gorgeous. But what I really love is the footage of him taking the field at Houston's stadium this past weekend. And you have never heard 80,000 people or however many people are in that stadium lose their damn minds like you have heard. And I'd love to play the clip, but here's what it sounds like. It is gorgeous to watch. It is a lovely story. He's so clearly, by all accounts, such a good dude. Lovely guy, J.J. Watt. And one more thing, this weekend is the Emmy Awards, and Pop Culture Happy Hour will be covering them. We'll be live tweeting the ceremony, writing about the awards, and on Monday, we will have a wrap on this show. So we look forward to that. And that brings us to the end of the show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at I Dislike Steven. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can find Katie at Love is Maroon. You can find Barry at B. Hardiman. That's H-A-R-D-Y-M-O-N. You can find our producer, Jessica, at Jessica_Reedy. And our producer emeritus, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our theme music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. Also, if you like the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And we will see you all next week.